Cliff, is this a good time to talk about Steve Raja?
This is a very good time to talk about Steve Raja. And there's no one I'd rather talk about than Steve Raja. He's undoubtedly the greatest caster of all time. My research has brought out many good casters, outstanding casters. Maybe there has been a caster in one particular event that might be better than Steve, but I doubt it. But the reason I say that Steve is the greatest caster of all time is because of the phenomenal distances he casts today. Nobody else has ever cast that far, in bait or in plug. Not that he wins every tournament, but on the average, year after year. Nobody has ever made as many perfect casts in bait and spinning as Steve Raja. Chris Kortz is a close second. But Steve won the first national championship when he was 14. I think that, I don't remember the year, but I think it was about 20 years ago. I think it's 20 or 20. And he's been national champion every year except once. And that year, he tied with Chris Kortz. Very unusual to have a tie. He's won his first international casting championship at age 16 and has won it 9 more times in a row. Phenomenal. Buddy Tarantino might have done it if he had lived long enough, and kept, but Buddy stopped casting before he died. So Steve is still casting better scores than he ever cast and better distances. He is very knowledgeable about technique. He's very knowledgeable about tackle. He learned from Myron, Phil, and Jimmy Green. And Jimmy Green helped him in his casting some too, but Jimmy would probably tell you Steve helped him as much as he's helped him, Jimmy. What else can you say about Steve except he's the world's greatest caster? When he was just beginning to win his national and international championships, he was a student at San Francisco University, and he took advantage of physical fitness courses and spent a lot of time in the weight training rooms and developed a strong physique and kept in real good shape and did lots of jogging, and he still stays in good shape and can cast phenomenal distance because his technique is terrific and the tackle is a little better. Probably better this year than it was 2 years ago, and he's a great caster, and maybe someday there will be a better one, but it's very unlikely.
Do you know him personally?
Know him personally? I met him once in Lexington, Kentucky, the year after he became national champion, and I know his father, and I know his brother Tim, and I know his mother. I think it was a rare opportunity to go to the first international tournament where Steve was, the tournament in Scarborough. There were only 3 American casters there. My wife Jean was there, but she didn't cast in those days. So Ann Strobel was a professional caster, and Steve was the national champion, and I was also there. So I had an opportunity to be with Steve a great deal and observe him on how he trained and how he practiced before the events, and how he worked with other casters. And he was just as much of a PR person for America as Buddy Tarantino and Myron Gregory. He shared all the information. Everyone thought he was a terrific person. Incidentally, that's his picture. When he was 16 years old and won the world's championship, best all-around caster, and the people from Europe, France, and Norway, who were their national champions, were all looking forward to meeting this young man, Steve Raja, and they were not disappointed. He was as good as they thought he would be, but he didn't win every event. But he won enough events that he was the overall champion, and they all just thought he was the most wonderful guy you ever saw.
Was this right after John died?
Yes. Steve was training with John to learn more about the equipment necessary for international casting when John was unfortunately killed. It was right after it was The tournament was held in Scarborough the same year that John Tarantino died. Yes.
And this was the same time that you and Jane offered to be his...
Yes, we arranged to meet Steve when he got there at a depot about at a airport about 35 or 40 miles away from Scarborough. So we met him, and we all traveled back to Scarborough together, and we stayed in a hotel together, and we got up early in the morning to eat breakfast together, and we hurried out to the practice fields together and had a terrific time practicing before the events and casting, and knew him very well. Absolutely perfect gentleman. And I remember when we were telling about the tournament at the next American Casting Association annual meeting, and my remarks at the time in our report was that Steve gave such a terrific impression that the Europeans thought, if that's what an American is, they'd like to be one.
I'm sure he appreciated your support at that time.
Oh, yes. So, of course. And he and his parents did, too. Very supportive. Very, very much appreciative. And he was always a gentleman, always courteous, very confident, but a very good caster and a very good fellow.
Did you have any association from a casting standpoint with George and Tim?
Yes, I'd say that, yes, at tournaments. I said, George and I are about the same vintage, I would say. I might even be a better caster than George, but I doubt it. George is a great, great supporter and a great member of the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club, and he did an awful lot to help Steve in getting his tackle together and learning how to cast. Excuse me. And Tim, being the younger brother, got started later, had terrific natural ability. Tim might have practiced, but I don't know whether anybody ever saw him. He had strength and coordination, and everything was so easy. But he also holds the record. Tim still holds the record as the only person who ever cast a perfect score in all the accuracy events. And Tim is a very nice fella and a good caster. And the three of them were always welcome at tournaments.
You mentioned Chris Korich.
Chris was Steve's casting friend, casting buddy. They traveled together. I first met Chris after having known about Chris from Myron Gregory. And Myron would write in letters and let everybody know that he had another caster coming along, Chris Korich. He was a fine fellow. Otherwise, Myron wouldn't have worked with him. And I met Chris at the Toronto tournament when Chris was 13 years old, just becoming an accomplished caster. And because of Myron, my correspondence and exchange on Chris, like we had got together and knew each other very well by the time the tournament was over, and became good friends. And Chris is a different kind of a personality than Steve, and would maybe even because of his age, and we talked a great deal and got rather well acquainted. And then I next knew Chris when he was 16 years old, and we all went to South Africa to the tournament. He and Steve were traveling together and met the rest of the group that went to South Africa in New York. So as the youngest caster in the tournament with all adults, there was no junior class. Chris was outstanding, won an event or two. It was the first time he'd ever won any world casting events. So I've been in touch with Chris ever since. We correspond, we visit, and he visits here. And Chris is one of the most outstanding international casters there is. He's maybe second only to Steve. And on numerous occasions, he wins Vince an international competition and beats Steve. But like he admits, that it's very difficult to beat Steve because Steve's not only his great skill in accuracy casting, but his strength and his strength and dedication in distance casting. Can't say enough good. Chris works hard, and at a very early time in the club, I know that when the club put on the national tournament, Chris, I think, was about 15 years old. He may not have been the chairman of the tournament, but he did a great deal of the work. He's a great organizer, and when they had the World Casting Championships sponsored by the club, Chris was chairman, and he's well thought of in international casting circles and has a great influence and does a great deal for the sport of casting.
Both of these young men take a fairly active role in teaching themselves, don't they?
Yes, they're great demonstrators. You mean teaching each other or teaching other people?
I suspect it's both.
Both. And they do clinics for tackle companies, especially Fenwick. And Chris does a lot of tackle demonstrations for Fenwick. And Jimmy Green, over the years, has depended upon Chris Koch a great deal. And they go to Federation of Fly Fishing meetings and do fishing and do casting and demonstrations. No better demonstrators than Chris Korich or Steve Ragiff. And there's been some great ones in the past, but they're two of the best. So that's about all I can say at this time, but if I could say more, it'd all be good.
Let me ask you just a question from your perspective as an historian. There have been other people over time that have played a role in our club and also have been influential as tournament casters or as fine fishermen. Some of the names that come into mind are Jack Horner, Jules Koonin, to mention just two. I guess the question I have is that almost from the start, there have been people in the club whose names you see on the list of people who have set casting records or and had major sort of demonstrated accomplishments within the field. Can you attribute the club's success in supporting these people, maybe not producing these people, but supporting these people? Is this unique among other clubs, or is this sort of common among clubs?
Well, the people you just mentioned, like Jack Horner, I probably would be a little bit roundabout way of telling what I have in mind, but Jack Horner is nationally known. I knew about Jack Horner before I ever, just because Jack Horner invented the shrimp fly. He's known by fly tires and fly fishermen. And it only was until I got into research that I learned more about him. He used to be a dedicated tournament caster and won tournaments, and a dedicated fisherman, an outstanding fisherman, and contributed greatly to the club. And the other person you mentioned was
Jules Koonin.
And I only knew him through research and knew that he was a great caster, a great shooter, I guess ice skater, and a writer, a sports writer. The club is most unique in having so many people like that in the club. I guess it's a large metropolitan area. There's a lot of fishing in the area, especially fly fishing. But it's just a unique situation with the Golden Gate Angler Club that had so many outstanding people like Jack Horner over the years, and Koonin, and all of the other people that we've been talking about. The only other club that remotely resembles is the Anglers Club of New York. And they go back a little bit further, possibly, with so many outstanding people. But again, it was a great metropolitan area, not far from the fly fishing and the Catskills. And they had outstanding people quite a little bit, like the LaBranches and dozens of other people. But no, Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club is unique. It's known the world over. I know that numerous times people who visit America who are fishermen make a point to come to the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club because they've heard about it and heard about Steve Ragiff and Jimmy Green and many of the other people that we've been discussing. Jack Horner, little Jack Horner.
Let me change the subject a little bit and just ask you one other question. I'm really overwhelmed with the amount of time that you have devoted to the sport of fly cast, tournament casting, and to the amount of effort that you've put into helping keep the national and the international organizations going, which of course supports fly casting in a way that no other way could, and also the time and energy you've spent in working through and trying to organize and document the history of tournament casting in the United States. What's motivated you to do this?
I really don't know what motivated me to do it. I think it was my interest in sports, interest in playing. I think it was my background. My college was centered around sports. I went to college hoping to be a physical education teacher or possibly coach mostly. And I think I was, I know I was a dedicated teacher and a dedicated coach and loved sports. Why I pursued this? Because I like casting. And I have to tell you at this time, and I'm glad you asked that question, anyone may not understand why people like casting. But this is what I found out after I'd been into casting and after I'd been into coaching. I didn't know this until after I'd coached a few years, that it takes a great deal of practice to really develop skills. For example, in baseball, I used to think that maybe it was natural ability. When I was in college, I thought that the difference was between the college players and the pros was that not much difference. They were just a little bit better natural ability, but I found out, too, that it was practice. And there's such an enormous amount of practice that's required to develop skills to a high degree. So when I got involved in casting, I had lots of skills. I was a physical education teacher, and I could tumble and play tennis and golf very poorly, but many skills. And it wasn't difficult for me to learn how to cast. But I didn't know how good I could cast until I spent hours and hours and days and a couple of summers full-time practicing. So as you develop the skill and get better, it's more fun. See, casting's like throwing a baseball. And it's more fun if you can throw it 90 miles an hour than if you can only throw it 60. Casting's like throwing darts or hitting a golf ball. And to see it propel through the air, it's just a natural, fun thing to throw, or it may be a snowball. But when you practice enough so that you can hit the targets almost every time, it's fascinating. And you wonder why a person would go down to the casting club with a fly rod with nobody around and stand there and cast. It's terrific fun when you can do it so well. I never reached the level of skill of a Steve Ragiff or a national championship, but I reached a high level of skill. In comparison, tournament casters to the run-of-the-mill fisherman is as much difference between a professional baseball player and a high school baseball player. And the sidelight is, at one time, at one when I was the most involved in the outdoor education project, and the tackle manufacturers were putting all these clinics, and they were trying to sell fly fishing. And the Bass Association, headed by Ray Scott, the tournament bass people, was just getting a good start. And the tackle manufacturers wanted to get them interested in doing fly fishing, so they held a few clinics. So I went to some clinics along with some other people when they were having bass tournaments, you know, sponsored by the Bass Association. And the bass fishermen all, most all, use bait casting, not even spinning them. So we had these workshops and everything, and Scott, Ray Scott, the man who promotes it, told me personally, confidentially, in my face, says the bass fishermen don't know how to cast. He says, I know what tournament casters do. He says, don't expect these fellows to be able to cast. And they couldn't, and they can't, and they still can't. They fake it. They cast 1,000 times, and they have equipment, they tighten it up. And it's not derogatory, I don't mean it, but compared, you know, so they tried to sell the bass fishermen on, in addition to having a tournament and catching fish, hey, great idea, after that tournament's over, for a couple $1,000s, we'll see who can hit a few targets. They wouldn't do it. They would not stand out there and cast at a target with each other. You know, because they never took time to cast except when they were fishing. And some of the tackle was made so that it could tighten up the bearings and whale it away out there, and they never had one. I've had dozens, practically, of bass fishermen, belong to bass, who went to tournaments, would come out. In my heyday, I had a pool and we taught, and everybody in Washington that was a fisherman one time or other would come out here. And they first thing they would tighten up their reels so they wouldn't cast. And when we would do sports shows and all, they'd come around and they were not good cast. So my point is that people like Steve and Regis and Chris and tournament casters developed their skills so high. It was terrific fun.
And up to that point, it isn't as much fun.
It's fun. There's many people who come down and they get the rod and they can't cast, whether it's fly or bait. Hey, they come down, and in 2 or 3 sessions down there, they can cast well enough to go fishing, and that's a whole heck of a lot of fun. So they go fishing, and it's a lot of fun. But it's more fun to cast the better you get.
So beyond that point, when it came to the hard work of dealing with rules and organizing committees and doing the necessary meetings and organizations to work on a national level and then on an international level. What carried you through that? Because that's a lot of work.
Yeah, what? I don't know. I always lived by rule books. When I was in college, I had to learn rule books so I could coach sports when I graduated. When I coached basketball, I had to know rules, and I loved rules. That let you play as hard as you could, okay? I knew baseball rule books inside and out, backwards and forwards. So when it came to the sport of casting, writing rules was just another thing that I had learned how to do. And of course, I liked it, or I wouldn't have been in the business of sports and coaching if I didn't like rules and regulations and all of that. So it was just something that was even better than what I was doing for a living. And then to think that we were working with people on an international basis, and those people were just people like we were, and we liked to work with them, and they were all good sports, and it was fun. I don't know. Maybe I should have gone fishing.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you. I would like to add thank you. Give my regard to the people back in Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club.
You need to come visit us.
I'll try again. Great. I've been in casting for... I never got out to the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club till I met Chris out there when we were getting ready for the World Games in... what?
It was 86 or something like that?
83. And then I've been there twice. It's a great place. People are wonderful. Appreciate. You're doing a great thing yourself. You're asking me these questions. Let me remind you that you're doing the same thing. You're doing something great for the sport of casting. You're spending a great deal of time and effort to make it possible to get this information on the Golden Gate Angling and Casting Club and the sport and putting it in a library where it's retrievable. It's not particularly good just to have the record, but in years to come or days to come, someone will need to know something about the people or the sport or the equipment, and it will be retrievable, and that's great.
Well, I'm enjoying it, I think, as much as you did or have.
Thank you, Tripp.